Welcome to another installment of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl, and I oversee the Children's and Family Ministries here at Stonebriar Community Church, which means birth through 12th grade. And within that group, we have seen a child or two, perhaps a mom or two, walk around with a particular glazed look in their eyes because they are so, well, overwhelmed. And so because of that particular reason, Kay Weimer wrote a book for me to help solve this problem at my church, because this is the only place that occurs, I'm fairly certain. Yeah. So I'm thrilled to have with us today Kay Weimer. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, you're very nice to have me. Y'all are nice to put up with me.
It is a genuine pleasure. I have loved spending time with you previously on this is your third book?
It is. Who would have thought?
And I haven't found
any. Who would have thought I had so much to say?
I think you have more words than you.
I think we both do.
You can keep going. So the title of this is
Not the Boss of Us, Putting Overwhelmed in Its Place in a Do-All, Be-All World. And the putting it in its place is really attaching it to truth. It's like repurposing or reframing overwhelmed so that it's not attached to the things of this world that trip us up and steal from us, but to attach it to truth. It's like, why not be overwhelmed by truth instead? So that's really what it's about.
And I'm thinking of a jujitsu sort of thing where you're using the weight of something against itself.
Well, that's so interesting.
Because you really can't stop being overwhelmed. It's an immovable object or an unstoppable object, pick your metaphor. You can't just refuse. You can't, like, I'm out. I'm not playing that game.
Well, we live life.
It is the oxygen.
We live in this world. That's a great point. I like that. It's true. You're not going to escape it.
You could become Amish, but then, you know.
Well, we weren't put on this planet to be by ourselves. You know, if being alone was the way to go, it would have ended with Adam. But it wasn't the way to go. It's about relationship. And so we live in this world with other people, and we walk in a place that has messages that are so often mis-messages. That involve things that can't help but overwhelm us. Like the book, the way the book is set up is really like, rather than be overwhelmed by, you know, X, be overwhelmed by truth, and then like what the truth is. And so it really starts out with performance pressures, because I think that is so significant in this world. I mean, it hits performance measuring marks, hits you from the get-go.
Right. So let me ask you, because of your research, you know what it's like to be overwhelmed, because you've done scientific research on this. But let's say someone was just instinctively experiencing it because they're a mother of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 kids.
Or one.
Or one. That's true. I've had less than seven, and I've seen plenty. What does it look like behind the eyes of anyone? And you talk in your book a lot about teens and young teens, but moms as well. So there's not
and
a specific
dads.
Segment of our life that we're immune from this. But what does it feel like?
Overwhelmed?
I think
it feels like you're drowning. I think physically you feel like you're drowning. Physically you have a hard time breathing. And so I had a mom come up to me the other day and said, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't breathe. Mm. Like, it's like, and I think you do that, especially because, you know, these people that are walking life next to you, they're significant and they matter. And you have messages in the world that say to you, well, you're a good parent if. And so the world tends to make a human being a product, like a kid is a product. People say you're a good mom, you're a good dad, or even a good grandparent, whatever. And so you're making a person a product, which is unfortunate because people are not products.
Right.
And so then you attach the worth to that person, because products have worth that are driven by a dollar amount, numbers, you know, all kinds of things that we attach to people. And people aren't that. Like people, our worth is not driven by that. In the world's economy, your identity and your worth are achieved. But in God's economy, it's received, which is so significantly different and powerful. Because so much of things that overwhelm us, if you peel back the layers, it goes to your worth and your identity. And it's like, okay, if that's the case, then why not be overwhelmed by purpose? I mean, by truth. And so like on the performance pressures, and that's really where it hit with us, because we have 5 kids. Our oldest is 22 right now, and the youngest is 11, and we've never liked the things that overwhelm. So for years, mm-hmm. I've said to my kids, literally, this stuff isn't the boss of you. Like, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It tooled my world. When I was in high school, I totally bought into the performance stuff. Even in religion, I really felt like you had
to do. It's easy to do, sure.
Oh my, I heard that. Yeah. Like, the word that I heard was in fellowship and out of fellowship with God. Ah. And you were in fellowship when you were doing great stuff, and right. you were out of fellowship when bad. And that was, I personally found that a heavy burden. It was really hard to stay ahead of that curve. And then just performance issues. I was a driven kid. I liked to do my best, except I didn't hear the word my. I heard it as the best, right. like you had to be the best right. in order to be okay. And it ate my lunch to the point where I found myself with an eating disorder when I was in college, because it was so hard to be able to function in that. And so I reached for something to be able to control and to, you know, make myself okay. And for whatever reason, we tend to hurt ourselves in doing, and, you know, that's a way that we cope. I had never heard the message of grace, like genuinely understood what grace was. So grateful to have gone through that experience, because that's what I got on the other side. And grace doesn't involve performance. Grace is a gift.
That is a particularly difficult concept to grasp. And at my church here, Stonebriar mm-hmm. Community Church, Pastor Chuck Swindoll is rather famous for preaching yeah. grace.
He is.
And he has had more people angry to the point of violence at
yeah,
him about grace
right.
more than anything else.
Yeah.
And they feel, and I know some of the stories, but they are angry because if there's grace, then you can just get away with anything, is their fear.
Right.
Which is both true and not true.
Really not true in God's economy, you know, because it is the economy. And the problem, why I think we get so frustrated with that word, is because we really like control.
I agree.
I really want A plus B to equal C. If you tell me A plus B equals C, then I can do that. But if that's not the case, I don't know what to do. And then it's like interfaith. Here you go. Here comes the part that's so hard. You get to walk without seeing, you know, being certain of what you hope for and certain and sure of what you don't see. And that involves my worth has been decided by God from the get-go, because he said so, not because I say so, but
right.
because he said it in Isaiah, you are mine. I call you by name. You are honored in my sight. You are precious. I love you. And it's powerful. Christ himself, grace. Paul, grace and peace to you. You know, grace, there's no performance. Peace is just that beautiful wholeness, the completeness, you know, Jehovah Shalom. And there goes the spiritual aspect of this. And it's like, how do you apply that today? Could that be true? So much of it seems like it's too good to be true.
Oh, I think that's some of the violent response mm-hmm. is that, one, then we can't control people.
Right.
And two, it can't be true.
Right.
Because I haven't done anything to deserve this.
Right.
The list of words that you just went through, it struck me that those, the grace.
Right.
And those words are all relationship
yes.
words.
Right.
Which has an economy all of its own. And then there's performance, which has a totally different
right.
economy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a lovely, giving person, you may not win a gold medal in ice figure skating. Because the economy is what we're gauging these two things by are completely different.
Right.
And you can be the best skater in the world and have no relationships of any value.
Well, even if you're the best skater, it's momentary.
That's true.
Okay.
And it could be just on that day.
Right.
The next day, you might not have been able to.
If the best was the truth. Let's just say, if the best is the truth, it wouldn't change. Truth can't change.
I agree.
Okay? And so the problem with performance, like banking on performance, I'm only okay if, is that if, the other side of it is in constant and perpetual motion.
Right. It's a moving. So,
and it involves this word enough, which is elusive. Like, you just can't get there. Whatever mark has been the mark that you have said, if this happens, like if my kid makes straight A's, if my kid gets 1600 on the SAT, if my kid gets on this team, you know, even when they're little, because like the select starts, you know, when they're young now.
Yeah.
When we started out, the select was probably in grade school, like when you were in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's in kindergarten or even preschool that you can pay over $1,000 for your kid to be on a soccer team. But even then, it's soccer today, it's lacrosse tomorrow. So whatever the definer is, just take a look at it. It changes. And so perspective is so important to just apply to it, just logically, in your own life, in my life. When I was getting my MBA, which I did because I really loved school. I'd go back to school today. It was so fun. And the language that everyone was learning, I got an international MBA, was Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point in history, Japan was the controlled
right.
the economy. Today, Japan does not control the economy. People were falling over themselves to learn Slavic languages because at that point was when the wall came down. They were like, we've got to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's. That is not the language people are racing to learn today because it changes. And so if it's true, if it's really going to be true, it's not going to change. And so in God's economy, the truth is this. You have purpose, unique purpose that I've given you, like purpose and gifting that's yours, just yours. And it's there for a reason. And it's to be used. Whether or not your unique purpose fits into STEM, science, technology,
right.
engineering, and math, which, by the way, has changed over the last year. Now it's science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So we added an A. So even that changes. So it's STEAM instead of STEM. But, and so it's like, did I bank everything on STEM?
Sure.
Oh, phew, now I can add art. And that's the way the world works. And so it's like, it does work that way. We live in this world. We just aren't of it. Like, my worth is not defined by that. My worth is defined by God. And if I can be overwhelmed by my worth being defined by God, it actually frees me up to be able to do whatever the purpose and gifting is based on my worth being defined by Him rather than my worth being defined by my performance. Does that make sense?
It does. Let me ask you a question that I had pondered while reading the book, and I'm sometimes kind of the king of the obvious, but perfect.
Right.
Why did we decide that was a good pursuit?
Boy, you're so philosophical. Because if you're really hitting, that is not the king of obvious by any stretch, I don't think. Why is it? What is our fascination with perfect? And it's fun to, I think that's fun to contemplate because I've never really thought about it that way before. So this is so fun chatting with you. I hope y'all enjoy it.
I'm sure someone will be listening, but it doesn't matter.
We have checked out, but I hope that it's interesting to you. But could our fascination with perfection have to do with what has been woven within us to crave the one who created us? Because there is one perfect, and it is God Himself, and we aren't. And is it that fascination with it and that never-ending dangling of a carrot with this message like, well, you're not okay if you aren't. Therein goes our do-all, be-all pressures and world that just leaves people unhappy. to the point where you at the beginning of this, it was like, I wrote this book because I was mad. Because this message of perfection and performance hurt someone we loved deeply.
Yeah.
To the point where she took her life over it. She was 14 years old. And that is so not right. And she was terrific. She was the kid who looked out and saw the one that was new and said, mm-hmm. hey, come sit with me, which was my daughter in seventh grade, the one she saw and said, come sit with me, you're new. And these pressures were so heavy on her.
Yeah.
And she believed it. And in a bad moment, she made a bad decision. And it's like, that made me mad. I was like, you know what? I don't like you. Overwhelmed, mm-hmm. but I'm now mad at you, mm-hmm. and it is over. Like, you are not the boss. You don't get to win. And I watched my daughter, who lost her friend, struggle for a year trying to figure out, like, just because it ripped everything out for her.
Sure.
Like, it tooled.
How do you make
with
sense
her.
Of that?
She didn't, and she was so angry with God.
Yeah,
because it took all that she thought and all that she believed and messed it up until the point where I never forget, because I went then, you know, course, in the strangest of way, within a year, one of my dear friends lost her husband in the same exact way. Mm. And it was like, what in the world? And it was, again, like the last person. It was just, how could that? I still don't even know how it happened. I can't go there. And I left my friend one day, and my daughter looks at me and she goes, she's going to be okay. And I was like, how are you saying that? So there was with no doubt she said it. She just looked at me matter-of-factly, she's going to be okay. And I said, how can you know that with such certainty? And she said, because God met me in my doubt. It was in the doubt that he met me, and I realized how much he loved me and how real he is, because he never left me, even in the midst of me crying out at him. And it took her and solidified her worth. I'm not kidding you. It was a worth issue for her where she said, how could you love me so much that you would allow me to tantrum like that for a year and not leave me? Because there was a point of some things that happened in her life that just really reiterated that. And then she's on the front line with her friends in the halls. That grade does not define you. That grade does not define you. Let me tell you about your worth. You have so much worth. You are so special. And then she calls it out specifically. I watch you. Mm-hmm. Did you see how you encouraged that girl today? You were the only one that saw her. That's in you. You're beautiful. She talks to her friends that are dying over outward appearance pressures, and she is in their face. You're beautiful. The size on a tag does not define you. Let me remind you, because it's soul beauty that she sees. And it's like one thing after the other. And I watch her do that. She's a teenager. It's like teenagers don't buy into something that's that they're not going to bank on possibly embarrassing themselves to the point of fighting for something if the cause isn't true. So anyway.
And again, all of those words are relationship words.
For sure.
Because we might be good at something today, and either we wouldn't be tomorrow, or that thing is no longer of value.
Right.
And that's a performance economy, which has its place.
We live in it.
But the confusion, and I think that's one of the ways that we navigate. And I read this, and I can't remember the author, but that we navigate life. Because to sit for 3 hours and get to know Kay Wima, that's going to take, that's 3 hours. And there's a lot of people listening that would love to do that, but that's 3 hours.
Right.
I can't do that with everybody that I bump into today.
Right.
It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we round things off. So this guy in my life is now not someone that I've spent 3 hours with and I've shared myself and I've heard his story. He's the guy that can help me get my car fixed.
Mm-hmm.
He's the car fix guy. And I round him off. I reduce to a thing that has value to me. And that's really all I'm interested in at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that perhaps with, you know, some people would do that with everybody in their life. You are not a person that I have fallen in love with and devote. You're the wife person. You do things for me, and that's how I value. So we reduce people so that we can kind of know our place and have a place for them, which has is the very act of I've reduced you to one or two things. And if you can no longer do those things, I have expressly told you you're of no value to me. And so that's going on all the time. And that's an economy of performance because I'm not interested in the relationship. Or I can't do that with everybody. And again, it's not you stop rounding people. I mean, we live in a complicated world with thousands of people we're going to bump into this week. But the people that we can spend time with, the relationship economy would beg us to step in and talk to them in words of relationship that would be nourishing, that would be pointing toward God, would be my appreciation for you is in terms of relationship and not performance, so I don't care if you can skate anymore or not. And I'll stop blathering on here, but I think the perfection thing is kind of that. I want, if I can be the best, I've rounded a world of complexities down to one thing. Now, the fact that that's an illusion is not really being scrutinized. I just believe if I can round myself off, if I can be superior, everyone will love me. That's an unchallenged assumption. If I'm superior, they will. Not everybody I talk to has been around long enough to remember the show, the movie Fame. I still remember a line in the, and it was a fantastic song. I'm going to live forever.
Right.
They're all going to know my name.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up
because
they did a survey in Great Britain with young kids in grade school, and they asked them what they wanted to be when they grew up. And over 80% in some fashion responded that they wanted to be famous, and which is different than probably when, you know, it was when we were kids, it'd probably be a teacher, a vet, or, you know, a doctor or something like that. And so the fame thing is fascinating because it too is an illusion. You don't have to go very far. I had one of my daughters loved One Direction. Like it was just there. Like they just loved him. In fact, for one Christmas, I bought her a cutout of one of the One Direction boys, you know, those cardboard cutouts. Because she thought it was so great. And of course, One Direction isn't even a group anymore.
Right.
And so that the fame thing is fleeting. You can't even go back a couple of generations and remember. And so if you're going to bank your worth or your value based on fame, it's misplaced. Like it won't give you what you think it will give you because it'll just kind of dupe you. And we definitely, through this process, like for sure, one of the overriding messages that I think is probably ad nausea through the book is that people matter. People matter, including ourselves. I think we're so judgmental on ourselves. There was a study, and there, one of the chapters, rather than be overwhelmed by outward appearance pressures, which are significant everywhere. You know, you want to say in Dallas, well, yes, in Dallas, they're terrible. But they're actually everywhere, and they're throughout history. I share a story in the book about just even the era of time where size of a foot really defined whether or not a woman was marriageable material. And it was just sickening. Like it was 2 inches, you know, it was the lotus flower. And then, but if you had even like over a 5-inch foot or something, you were discardable as a person. And I'm sitting here thinking 2 inches. I don't know. It was bad, whatever it was. And those those measuring marks have changed. And there's a chart in the book even about just through the generations, what body type is celebrated.
Yep.
And today, the body type that's celebrated, it's not normal. Like, you would have to have some surgery to mm-hmm. be able to be that body type. And it's one of those things where you're going to give your worth over to something like that, that again, changes. It's mm-hmm. not constant, which should tell us if what is celebrated changes, there's something wrong with the mechanism that is defining what is celebrated. So you can go that road, or you can go to truth. And the truth is, you're beautiful. You're beautiful. Each person has beauty attached to them and has more worth than a number on a size of a tag. Than they could imagine. Deb did a study with women and asked them and did a study of women from 64 countries. And they were ages from the ages of 18 to like 70. And they asked them, do you celebrate beauty in other women? And over 80% of them said, yes, I do. And then they said, do you celebrate beauty in yourself? And 96% said no. So very quick to judge ourselves, yet we can celebrate somebody else. Could we just for a second realize that there's something of beauty in each one of us and dial down the outward appearance pressures, which goes back to what you're saying. People are not a product. The economy that we live in today would say that. It's like, no, that stuff isn't the boss of you. Truth is the boss. It resoundingly wins. Truth is the part that is, was, and always will be because of who it's attached to. And so, people matter, including ourselves. And those kids traveling alongside, they're people. They aren't products.
Right.
Even though we try to have some formulaic right way. There's not a formulaic right way. There just isn't. And scripture is clear on that too, you know. For one person it's this, for another it's that. There are good and right ways to live that are good for you. You know, do these things so that it may go well for you.
Right.
But God doesn't, numbers aren't jazzing him. You know, you have Gideon. It's Gideon, mighty warrior. Gideon did not think he was a mighty warrior. The Lord saw who he was. It's sort of like even the picture behind the picture, you know, social media, we see all these curated images and which aren't real. And then, but it's so hard to see the pic behind the pic. What if for a second we tried to see the pic that God sees and have that even apply to us? Gideon, mighty warrior. And it wasn't even with a huge army. He gathered the people, and then the Lord was like, that's too many. Well, that's too many. And, you know, pare it down, which is a little different than the economy that we live in,
yeah.
Which is how many friends you have. It doesn't have a comma, you know. How many views? It's just ridiculous. Little kids know how many views.
And in 10 years... there will be a new mechanism.
I know. It's fascinating to think about that and how quickly this has come on. And so perspective is huge. As we walk into these waters that are overwhelmed, one of the questions you asked me at the beginning was, how does it make you feel? Well, you kind of are losing your breath. It's hard to breathe. I feel like I'm drowning. So recognize it. You know, call it out. See it. And say it, especially to somebody. And it's important to have safe people around you
right.
that you can authentically talk with, that aren't trying to instantly fix your problems, because you've touched on too earlier about the instant nature of society. It has to be now. And that's not God's economy. Like, it's usually 7 to 40 years or something in those lines.
Yeah.
And it's like to have safe people around you that you can talk to, because it's incredibly important to out overwhelmed. Overwhelmed loves to live on the shoulders of things like judgment and shame and things that measuring marks that we either make or don't make. But it allows us to think things about our worth that aren't true. And when that happens, we tend to isolate. It's just, I don't know why we do it, but we do. We don't talk and we go away. It's like, please don't do that. In this case, when you feel the, You know, call it out, see it, say it to a safe friend, and then get some perspective. Like, call truth in. Allow it to inform. I have a friend, and I include her story, that she literally will write down what it is. This is, like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. Well, what is it? Well, it usually ends up with fear somewhere, anxiety.
Right.
Well, I'm afraid because my daughter didn't make the volleyball team. She's going to be a loser, and she's going to be left out, and that's just going to be terrible. It's a detriment to her life. Everything is ruined, you know, because of, and then she literally will write the truth next to it. Well, she's more than volleyball. She's an artist. She was created to be an artist. How do I know that's true? Well, ever since she was like 2 years old, she's been doodling and doing all this stuff. So do I trust God who created her? Or do I trust the world that's saying you have to be on the volleyball team in order to be okay? And she's like, I'm not so sure, but I'm going to bank on God. And then you ask him, help me in my unbelief because I don't believe it. Like, please help me, which he does because truth wins. It is finished, was said on the cross. And then she goes the step further and allows her daughter to engage in what she's gifted at. And I mean, really and truly, your kid didn't make the volleyball team. Actually, every kid in her grade did, except for her. And what does she do? She gets her kid to make like great things to put on their lockers. So in that moment, it gets her eyes off herself, which there's always life in that. And she does what she's good at and props these people up. And it actually makes her feel good in the moment. And that might sound Pollyanna-ish, but it's powerful.
I often am talking to both kids and young parents, typically. And because I think in cartoon terms, I often ask them, what's your superpower?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've watched every Marvel movie, and I'm an X-Men fan. Science fiction is just, it's such a huge metaphor to me for things spiritual and otherwise. And most people kind of blink defensively, and they have no idea. They've never imagined that they would fit into that kind of a category. And someone more literary would, you know, what are your strengths or what are you? But I actually think that there's some humility involved with being able to say what your gifting is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the process of, in your story, it was volleyball, and I've seen several boys who either didn't make football the second or third year in high school, and it's devastating.
It is.
It's horrible for the parents as well. I mean, it's a genuine tragedy. But I think the process of becoming the person that God wants you to be is not just finding out what you're good at, but finding out what you need to walk away from.
Well, I love what you just said. One of the chapters is, rather than be overwhelmed by product pressures, be overwhelmed by the process.
Yeah, yes, I remember that.
The process is powerful, and the process often involves failure, and we're so scared of that.
That is probably the single source of anxiety among families, is what if?
Oh, those what ifs.
And then failure is, you know, described in a million different ways.
Right.
But that's not a relational term.
No, it goes back to product.
Yes.
Okay? And so it's like a person is not a product. And failure actually can help you get, first of all, it helps you not have atrophy. Like you actually can get back up, get back up, get back up. And it often leads you to the place where you are engaged in your giftedness. And I'm guessing that probably someone listening to this, I know for us, there are lights on in this room. The failure that preceded the creation of the light is staggering. And you can look at, if it's success you're after, go talk to anybody that is successful and their road is completely paved with failure. And so it's like, don't be afraid of that, because you don't have to be afraid of it, because your worth is not defined by success as the world defines it. Okay? Your worth is defined by God, who says, you're precious. You're honored in my sight. You are mine. I know your name. I see you. It hits those core beliefs that we, you know, if I'm going to define failure, it's like, why are we so afraid of failure? Because if I'm a failure, then I will be excluded. I won't belong.
Right.
And I will not be accepted. Failure is the epitome of being rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so if I'm going to be overwhelmed by truth instead of those things, because it's like, start peeling it back, call it what it is. Well, at the core of that is rejection. But the truth is, you're accepted. So much mm-hmm. was given, like, and not given, oh, you're so bad, I have to do this for you. It's given out of love.
Yeah.
I love you so much, I'm giving everything for you. You are so accepted that you are actually an heir. Like, I don't count you as a friend. I count you as a child of God. You are heirs. I mean, it's like, spend time in any New Testament book, and those words are over and over again, adopted, heir,
right.
Son, daughter, because you're a part of the family. Like, you are a child of God. And that is the epitome of acceptance. Because if you think for a minute who it is that says that, it's like the creator, the Lord of the universe, the one who has dominion and authority and power over everything, everyone, all the heavenly realms, all anything seen or unseen, everything, the epitome of belonging, because a lot of this stuff goes down to, I want to belong, I want to be loved, like their internal core human mm-hmm. needs to be loved and to be known and to belong. And you have every one of those in the one who says you're mine. And so it's like, okay, that sounds kind of vague and I'm not sure I believe that, but call it out in your life, like literally, and watch it play out. Ask the Lord to show you where, because I'm convinced that if you ask to know him, that's like, get ready, because it's going to come in spades and you don't have to be afraid of it, because it actually comes with freedom. You know, I think people are afraid to pray things because they're afraid they might be Job. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh my goodness, if I pray that, terrible things are going to happen. And if you really go back and look at the book of Job, it is the Lord who says to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? And if you look in chapter 4, you can see how his friends out Job as being one whose righteousness was defined by his actions.
Yeah.
And so he actually, it was like, hey, my servant Job that I love, he thinks that his acceptance in my sight has something to do with what he's doing for it. And I'm about to free him from that. And I think that's why at the end, well, you get a beautiful last part of that book with the Lord God himself saying who he is, which if you want to know.
Didn't answer any of the questions that were being asked.
No, and it's beautiful though. It's like, because I think we forget that he's the one that separates water from water and there's dry ground on the other side of that. Like, who does that? And Jesus displayed that when he walked on water. There's no element that has power over God. He has authority over everything. And it's like every single thing you see, and you can see the beauty of him in all creation, especially in people, because they're created. He said, let us create man in our image. Well, that means like in each one of us is him. And it's so beautiful. There was this, I do love the royals. And so I watched the Meghan and Harry wedding. I just think it's so sweet. And a few weeks ago, they invited her to come see her dress. You're not a royal fan.
No.
You like sports. Well, although you might be a closet royal fan, I don't know.
If any of them had superpowers, I'd be in, but.
But they don't.
Yeah.
So they invited Meghan to come see her dress, which they do a nice job cleaning up the dress. And mm-hmm. it was in a room by itself and on a mannequin. It was just beautiful. And they showed her walking in, and she hadn't seen it since the day she wore it. And it's so pretty because she's just gently, you know, fingering the veil and remembering clearly. And she asked to one of the attendants, did you find it? And they were like, find what? And she said, did you find the blue? Because she had taken from the outfit that she wore the first date that she had with Harry, which was a blue outfit. She had a very tiny portion of that outfit cut out of it and sewn into her veil. Hmm. And that was her blue. And I was like, that is, and it was so beautiful. And I thought, I'm sitting there going, that's exactly what God has done with every one of us. A portion of himself woven in each one of us that is so special and has such great value. And it's just that beautiful, unique purpose and gifting that when you engage with it, you're engaging with him. Like what you were created to do, your purpose is him, you know? And it's like the part of him that's in you. And it's so beautiful to think about that, so much more so than in some poetic way. But in reality, you look in scripture, there are people who are set apart, literally created to put forth the temple because they had artistic creativity within them where they knew exactly what to do and how to make it the most beautiful because it was a part of them because the creator mm-hmm. who makes things so beautiful that exist in places that we've never seen before, that's who created you. That's who says you have worth. And that's who says you're mine. You belong. You're accepted. And so why not be overwhelmed by that for 5 minutes and let the other be dialed down? I don't know. I think it's kind of fun to think about and definitely fun to employ. And I will tell you that I've got 5 very different children. And I've had kids that have really been through pain, like not good stuff, mm-hmm. okay? That are in the 7 to 40 year, like, are we going to get on whatever the other side is? Right. I don't even care what the other side is anymore because today's a great day.
Yeah.
And they live it. And it's hard for me to think they're different personalities, but I've watched truth inform their lives, and it's so powerful, and it allows them to be who they are and be able to go to the dance if they want to or not go if they don't want to because their worth isn't defined on whether or not they were invited to the dance or not. I've watched them be able to be on a team or not be on a team and not have their worth be defined by whether or not they made it. I watch them be motivated by their time, not by what place they get in.
Right.
And I'm sitting there going, and just FYI, I'm so flaky. I'm not standing over them going, hey, this is what you should do. I just get to watch truth play out in their lives. My youngest one said to me the other day, do you know why you can't see tomorrow? And I'm like, why? And he said, because you can only live today. And that is pretty powerful from a little kid, where you put in its place the happenings of yesterday, and you put in its place the expectations, the anxieties, the excitement for tomorrow, and you respect them, but you don't let them over-inform today so you can live it, because it's a great day.
I can't remember where I was, but I have heard someone from up front talk to, not specifically to this audience, but at the segment of the audience that are single. And the comment was, don't be frustrated that you're single because your identity is in Christ. Mm-hmm. And I kind of looked around like, is anybody going to buy that? What does that even mean? Walk out feeling shamed.
Right.
Because I don't know what that means, but it's not true for me. I guess I need to go home and make that. And I think the kind of truth that you're talking about that is so life-changing, and the image I had in my head is like watering a plant. Mm-hmm. You can't just pour a bucket of water
right.
on a seedling.
No.
It needs, so even one healthy, comfortable watering is not enough. It
right.
The truth, so if someone is now for the first time considering, maybe, what if I lived by truth
right.
instead of the lies from the world?
Right.
It's not a kerplunk.
No.
And
it is not.
It would be best to have people around you, and for the parents that are listening, your superpower is to water your children mm-hmm. appropriately over years mm-hmm. so that they just believe that their worth is not what the world says it is, because the world is, as they says in the original Hebrew, it's all jacked up. And we can acknowledge that, but we still live by those rules. And a single telling of, but you know, truth is more powerful.
Right. It's just not going to cut it, is
it? So I think the part of the program, the correction, and I hate learning new important things when my children are adults or near,
they're,
you know,
people. They're, I would love still to have, human beings.
I would love to have known this back when they were, you know, four, and I could have rescued them from a bunch of stuff. But it's, I don't know, 100 times a week, it's thousands of times over years that someone is told, you just amaze me. Mm-hmm. I just love it when you laugh. I when you walk into the, and this is a, you know, perhaps a husband and wife thing, when you walk in the room, I just gasp a little.
Yeah.
Still, completely, those are relational words, mm-hmm. not performance words.
Right.
But a few doesn't do it. It needs to be, if not water, it needs to be the oxygen that people breathe. And then I think they might be able to start believing that truth works.
Yeah.
Or is true.
I do think it's, I use the term soul hydration, you know, that sort of like if you're running a marathon, if you were a runner, I don't even pretend to be one, but from what I understand, if you're in the middle of the race and you're thirsty, it's a small problem. You really have to hydrate before.
Yeah.
And so I do think that hydration is a really interesting concept, and that absolutely, for, I think you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself first and
that's a great point.
Consider it to be true for yourself. And I think it's a work through. I don't think it's a workout. And so there's a lot of surrendering,
like that.
You know,
yes.
So that you're going, just, it's like, it goes again, when you start to feel the overwhelmed, call it out, say it, take it back to the studs, see what it is, just write down truth next to it. You know, definitely have people around you that will play the game, if that's what you want to call it, to be able to go, this is what I'm thinking. Help me see it. And together, it's a lot better than walking it alone. I'm super blessed. I really like the people that are around me. Mm. I do. I like them. They're terrific. I think that I'm allowed to like them because performance doesn't play a huge... I don't like what it does to people. I'm just saying, I've never liked it. I have for years yelled out the car window, this stuff is not the boss of you. Mm-hmm. I've for years begged them to see the person, like if the coach is yelling at you, could you just for a second not receive that as the coach yelling at you? You're horrible. You're the worst. But instead possibly see the person that's yelling and go, oh, maybe he's motivated by yelling. You know, that could motivate him. Or maybe he was yelled at all the time. And so could you have compassion? You know, it's like, if you can get to the relationship part, and that these are people, like it's people, the person sitting next to you on the sidelines, the person sitting next to you at the drama tryouts, I don't know what it is. It's like these are people who genuinely believe that they're only okay if their kid is okay. And that's the world's economy,
right?
That you're only okay ifs. Like, you know, where you're invited, you make the team, you make the grade, all those ifs, fill in the blank, and then hit God's economy. You're okay. Because. Not if, but because. Because I did this for you because I love you, and I've made you okay. And so, accept it and receive it. Because I think he has to do that in us.
Right.
I don't know if left to ourselves we can.
Yeah, well.
So, yeah. And it's like, and it's not like receive it and you're a loser if you're not. It's sort of like, I think it's a lifelong thing. And I think welcome to this beautiful, beautiful way where he's not leaving you. You know, going back to the garden, he did not leave them. They ran, they hid. He didn't go anywhere. He asked questions. He already knew the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And he closed them. in an unimaginable way, in a way that they never, ever could have even thought of.
Right.
He did. And it's like, just FYI, that was outside clothing. He talks very specifically about the inside clothing, where he's clothed your heart in exactly the unimaginable way that you could never believe it to be true, because you'd never come up with it. And he did it because he loves you, and because you're his, and because you're a child of the King. I accidentally yelled that outside the car window one time, and the kid looked back at me, and I was like, "Well, did that just come out of my mouth?" And I'm like, rolling up the window. But he was walking into something really hard, and I was just like, "Oh, please don't forget whose you are. In this world, it's who you are. In his economy, it's whose you are." I don't know. Even talking about it, sometimes I sit there and go, that sounds ridiculous.
Well, it's otherworldly. And
which is how, and you know, you're so nice. Are you doing this on purpose? Because that's like the biggest setup for the end of the book, where it was like, be overwhelmed by eternity. Overwhelmed by eternity instead of to the present sufferings and all that's going on.
Well, and that's the act of faith. And I feel compelled, because I've spoken to a lot of people who are very confused by faith, where someone, they got sick and they said, well, I'm just going to have faith that this is all going to work out. And then that person does not get better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the faith that we're called to by Scripture, is faith in the things that God said he will do. Mm-hmm. The first one was, frankly, a wish. I want this thing to be true. That's not faith. That's choosing. That's choosing what you would like to occur.
Mm-hmm.
Scriptural faith is what God said he will do, he will do.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the stuff in the future, and the stuff, there's a lot of, it's not just a future faith. This is the faith right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the otherworldly stuff is very difficult, even for Christians in our culture, to believe in.
Well, it's a mystery.
And the other stuff is so concrete.
Right. And, you know, those kinds of things drive my husband crazy. He's like, how can you say it's a mystery? And it's sort of like, well, part of it actually is. Part of it's hidden, according to him. You know, he reveals as he does, as he decides. And it's like, I think it's a trust factor. Do I trust? And I think trust is pretty significant, because it involves action. You know, faith is one thing, but when you put it into action, it becomes trust, and you're actually stepping, or you're doing based on the certainty of what you just said, that God is faithful, which he claims. And there's a great verse, and there's a part, I think it's in 2 Timothy, where it talks about, if I do this and God does this, it's like, if I am unfaithful, God is faithful, for he cannot be counter to his character. He can't not be. And we don't even know what that looks like.
Yeah.
But he is consistent. And that's one thing I love about the word. Somebody asked me the other day, how do you just, like, because you're right about the seeping in. It's like a tea bag. It's seeping in it. It's like having it, marinating in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of that is marinating in the effort to know him. Reading scripture to know him, not to tell me about myself, but just to know him. Like at the end of whatever you're reading, just ask the words, what do I learn about God? And you'll just like, and make a list. Like I have a running list in my Bible. At the back of my Bible, I have a list of what God says about himself, like names he calls himself, because mm-hmm. I just find that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a running list in almost every journal book that I have, which, let me just say, I start a journaling book not to journal, but because I've read something that I think is interesting and I don't want to forget it. And I will almost always have a list of, you know, I'll go, who does he say? What do I learn about God? Well, he is faithful. He is kind. He's compassionate. He is just. He's holy. And just like lists. And, you know, I have probably, I don't know how many of them I have, because I can't find them after I start one. So I'm flaky. I'm not organized. But I love this list, because then I read it and I'm like, yes, 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 yes. And I wrote them down because of an action that occurred. So it's not like, oh, I hear that he's kind. Will you watch it? I hear that he sees all. Will you see it? His name, Elroy, R-O-I, was uttered by somebody who felt very unseen. It's the only time it was said in scripture. And it was Hagar out in the desert with Ishmael, where she had gone to die because she felt, because she was abused, mm-hmm. and because she felt completely unseen. And there's the Lord saying the names. And she says, the God who sees, because he does see. He sees all, he knows all. Do I believe that be true? Well, there's countless times that you see him tell people what they're thinking. It's just, and he's not running away from them. He's right there. It's Sarah, you know, she laughs. Well, you, this time next year, you'll have a child. And she's like, well, why'd she laugh? Well, she lies. I didn't laugh. Yes, you did. You know, and it's just, it's amazing. And it's so, that to me is the safety aspect. He knows. And he loves, and that's why I guess I love the privilege of getting to be a parent. Even as an aunt, I remember this with my nephew, way before I was married or even had children. I so enjoyed watching that child delight in things. I distinctly remember even small things. We were driving down Preston Road, and he's sitting in his little car seat, and he could see out the window, and it was kind of tilted back, so he was looking up, and we drove by a church that had, it was in the midst of trees, and he goes, a steeple, you know? I've driven that mm-hmm. road, to, I can't even, 5,000 times? Mm-hmm. I've never seen that. And here's this little kid. He was two or, you know, tiny. And he's delighting. It was just, it was so beautiful. To watch a child delight in creation. It's just beautiful. And it's like, how do you think that comes from nowhere? And that the Lord just might delight in us the same way? So here it is so you can see it up close and personal. Because I do that with you every day. Like, I love you that much that you could love somebody. And then that's where I think it's too overwhelming, Dave, because I can't imagine. I don't think we know what to do with the thought of being loved like that. It's just too much. And yet we are.
Well, we're in the we're on deck for Christmas.
Oh, yes.
And if ever there's a time in the year when being overwhelmed is
the holidays
served up and piled up.
Holidaze.
And then our own expectations of, you know, perhaps the way we remembered it, which probably wasn't true.
Oh, there's so much, though, because even relationships, you put relationships in there. I mean, holidays are crazy.
Yeah, it's a powder keg.
Yeah.
So how would you suggest that, in this case, probably parents who are going to be more the listener than a teenager, How do I go into Christmas and not just get crushed?
I think honestly, I think that's the first thing. As you start to consider, but it's like just try it a little bit. So if it's the holiday decorating of your house, which will happen, if it's the holiday seeing the valet parker in your neighbor's or whoever, someone on your street or your great friend's house, and you weren't invited to the party, or all kinds of things. Just be honest. I think one of the first things to do is to be honest. Hmm. What kind of expectations am I putting on myself, and why? Like, go to the why. Well, I want it to be like this. Thanksgiving, you know, it's the first one, and I'd love that it's before Christmas, because maybe it might get us into practicing thankfulness. Like, thankfulness. Like, just if you think of hydration, it's like, get hydrated now. Start practicing thankfulness. Hmm. Being thankful, calling out the things you have to be grateful for and enjoying them rather than wishing for something else. Like, just enjoy what you've got. Be happy in it. And let the others, whatever it is, like your kid, well, I have to have a, well, I don't even know what it would be this year. You know, I can think of the years.
Well, it's Cabbage Patch Dolls, right? That's the big thing this year.
Yes, Cabbage Patch Dolls.
I'm perhaps a little behind, but
I honestly don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But to be able to help inform that, it's great if you have one, it's great if you don't. You know, so many people, these kids have been playing that game called Fortnite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that somehow their kid's worth is determined by Fortnite, which the kid thinks. And so it's like to be next to that person going, it doesn't matter what level you're on. Let me tell you, you've got worth. It does, you know, your worth is not determined by this level. Your worth is not determined by this. And think about, why don't you call that kid that you're playing with? Why don't we have them over to and spend some time with some very real life things that involve relationship, like board games.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Okay, maybe. They're really fun. And a puzzle sounds boring, doesn't it? But puzzles are so weird. They like must have like a magnetic, like put into the pieces.
Because
people have a hard time walking by one. And if you're sitting at a puzzle, guess what happens? You talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And it's not forced. You know, it's not like, give me your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You get off that phone. You get off that game. It's, you know, if at all possible, just be a drippy faucet. Come play this game with me. Come play this game with me. Come play this game with me. And it always feels better. It really, it's crazy how it does. I had a kid ask me to play the other night a game, and I'm just telling you, I did not want to. I had really a lot of stuff I needed to do. And then I remembered what I'd written in the book.
Yeah, doggone it.
And I was like, well, I guess I'll say yes. And I physically felt great after playing it because we talked. So anything you can do to promote human interaction is a good thing. Anything you can do to promote kindness helps. Simple kindness and practicing it. When someone cuts in the line or honks at you in the parking lot because people get so angry this time of the year, hit it back with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Just even for the moment, what must be going on in that person's life today? Be internet nice. Practice it. Find someone that you haven't talked to in a while and say, I had this memory I just loved. I remember this in our life. I'm so grateful for your friendship. Just a nice something. And practice it today. And I actually think it can change your holidays because it does. It takes you back and makes you grateful for relationship, which quite frankly is the reason.
That is the thing.
For the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what gets lost in the performance.
Yeah, so don't let it get lost in the holidays. Don't let it get lost in expectations. Oh gosh, you know, the hardest part I think for so many people about the holidays is relationship.
Sure.
And so breathe and ask for help from the Lord and say, please help me get rid of the bitterness that I hold on to, likely rightfully so, and possibly please help me love and find compassion over wanting to run away. And have boundaries, you know? Boundaries are so critically important. But it's time for the bitterness to get out of the room. It is not the boss either. It just isn't. It doesn't get to win. It's already taken too much. It's like, forget about it. Let it go. And know, again, that's where God's justice. We're so afraid of God's justice, but he's the one that says, vengeance is mine, which you don't really want if you think about it. But his whole point is, I've got you covered, from what I understand. And I'm not a theologian. I'm just a person who thinks weird thoughts.
Well, and we're so glad that you do.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, we are all ready now for Christmas. We are going to be thankful. We are going to become guided missiles to spend time with people.
Yeah.
And when my family, when we do the game thing, and it's hard because it's like
crazy?
You have to stop your pattern or your pace or something. But we do not sit around and laugh like we do normally. Until we're playing a game.
What's your favorite? Because people need to know what they are, because there are some fun games out there.
Well, we like the ones that are simple.
Well, like Rat-A-Tat-Cat is really fun.
We play Uno.
Uno's awesome.
And then when it gets ugly, we play Speed Uno. And the rules are a little different, and it gets a little more aggressive.
But it's so fun. Mexican Trains is really fun. They're great, easy games that every age can play.
Yeah.
And then there's fun games that are, there's one called, I think it's called Codename, that's super popular right now. It's a blast. there's just some terrific things out there to just engage in. And you've got cards at home. It's just, life is good. It goes too fast. So enjoy it. And I think one more thing to really practice in this season is joy. And you know, joy is so much more significant than happiness, because joy really does engage trust. And it's just that the joy that comes with truth, to be able to allow you to celebrate and be happy in the midst of things that are hard.
Hmm. Well, what a great note to wrap on in preparation for the Christmas season, which is fantastic and amazing, but it's also a minefield that
can be.
Needs to be navigated properly. Thank you, KWMA, for being with us.
Well, thanks for letting me blabber on for so long.
And thank you for writing You're Not the Overwhelmed, You're Not the Boss of Me.
Yeah, I do like this book. I like it.
And I have talked with other people around the church who have read it, and one of the comments was, and I know this is true, but it's just so interesting to hear it sort of on the street, is that she's saying what I've thought. So there's a commiseration.
I'm so glad.
I'm not the only one.
Yes, that's so important. Because you're not alone. You are not the only one.
That's one of the deceptions.
Well, it's that isolation thing.
When I'm by myself,
I'm
rather toxic to myself.
Absolutely. So don't do it. It doesn't get to win.
So if you're listening, you're not the only one who has felt overwhelmed, and you're not the only one who has found their way out, but you can't find your way out by yourself. So thanks again for being with us on a Parenting Pathway podcast. Thank you, Christine, for getting everything together, and thank you, Jason, for doing all the technical magic-ry-ness that you do. And thank you for listening to us, and I hope that you join us next time. And thank you, and remember, don't do life and do not do parenting by yourself.